Oh, wait. You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM, and this is this week's Community and Club Takeover. Today in the studio, I have Julia from Queen's Cancer Kids First. So welcome to the studio.
Hi, welcome.
Well, I should say welcome back because you've been here before wearing a different hat, but we're delighted to have you back and to have some more great music that you've recommended. So,
Absolutely. So
you have a big event coming up. So that's sort of what we're going to spend most of our time talking about today. But to begin with, what is Queen's Cancer Kids First? How did it get started and what do you do?
Awesome. Thank you, Ara. That's a great question. So Queen's Cancer Kids First is a local chapter of a global nonprofit called Cancer Kids First that aims to improve the quality of life of cancer children or children with cancer around the world. So we started Queen's Cancer Kids First as a chapter at Queen's, so it's an institutional chapter. And we aim to advance quality of life through activities, through events and things like that, like the one that we're hosting currently, which is our holiday toy and book drive for pediatric cancer patients in Uganda.
Awesome. And it's a young group, like you started in 2023, but it's expanded quite a bit, it looks like, from your start of four people, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So me and three other amazing previously health science students. We have Dream Twit Barnes, who's currently a second year medical student, Ruki Inikori, who's a first year medical student now, and Aura Maxwell, who's also a first year medical student. We started this club when we were all in our second year of health sciences, and we just aimed to, or I guess we were hoping to increase awareness about childhood cancer as it has affected all of us in very unique ways, and we're all personally connected to the cause in a variety of ways. And we started out as just like a normal club. We got ratified. We had a team of, I would say, like maybe 10 people, including us, so like six, in our first year. And we were able to raise about $600, not 600, that's misinformation. We were able to raise, I think, about $400 in our first year through events and fundraising and things like that, which helped get our club started. And then we built slowly onwards in terms of fundraising, but also in terms of our research, which I feel like is a really interesting aspect of our club that is a bit different from other cancer clubs at Queen's.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I read is that, like, so Cancer Kids First is it Canadian or is it worldwide?
It's global. It was started by an American youth. It's like the largest youth-led nonprofit.
Okay.
So it was started by a girl in the U.S., but they have chapters literally like in almost every country around the world.
And it's the largest non-medical professional-led cancer organization, I think.
I'm not sure about that, but okay. It is non-medical, yeah. Okay. So we don't really do any kind of like cancer research, like biology related.
Right.
But so it is non-medical. It's okay. Mainly psychosocial support.
Yeah, which is a huge part of it.
Absolutely.
So I imagine this is sort of what inspired this next topic that we're going to talk about. But so what inspired Queen's Cancer Kids First to launch this toy book and clothing holiday drive? And why focus specifically on childhood cancer patients in Uganda?
That's a great question. I'll talk more about my experience. So I am a Ugandan Canadian. I was born in Uganda and I came to Canada when I was six. And throughout my university career, starting in high school, I had the opportunity to work at a cancer lab at SickKids. So I did clinical research at SickKids for about 3 years. I was in the cancer ward, like interviewing patients and talking to parents and things like that. So I got a very close look at what childhood cancer looks like in Canada and how it's treated and the sort of survival outcomes. And then in my second year of university, right after we started Queen's Cancer Kids First, it had been running for a semester, I went back to Uganda for Christmas. And a couple of days after Christmas, I was walking the streets of Kampala, which is downtown, like the capital city. And I was seeing a lot of cases of cancer that was obviously like terminal and not diagnosed and not treated. So I remember seeing this one boy, and he had a head tumor, and his head was very, very enlarged by the tumor, like it was humongous. And he couldn't move, and he was like laying on the pavement, his mouth was open, like flies were landing on him. And he had his mother beside him, and she was just kind of like looking at me like basically begging for me to help her. And at that point, like no amount of money that I could have provided to her would save her son. And it was such a pivotal moment for me, because after working in SickKids for so long and seeing so many children be diagnosed and survive and go on to live like whole lives and come back at 21 with children and married, and it's so sad to think that it really is the geographic lottery when it comes to survival, especially when it comes to children, because they don't live a full life. They don't ask for cancer. There's very few risk factors that really can lead to childhood cancer that it's like, oh, maybe they could have prevented it by not smoking or not doing this or not doing that. It's very, very unfortunate to have an 80% mortality rate in sub-Saharan Africa for childhood cancer. And as like a 21-year-old health sciences student, I can't cure cancer, and I'm very aware of that. But as like an aspiring physician, I'm really motivated to advocate for this patient population because of this geographic lottery and because of their poor survival rates. And I hope that with this toy drive, this is like the first step to bringing awareness to the fact that Africa is really struggling with dealing with non-communicable diseases like cancer. And we hope to bring some light to these children, especially around the holiday season, and just hopefully brighten their days and make what they have a little bit more tolerable.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine the frustration of knowing that the medicine and technology exists, but just not where you are. And yeah, I think sometimes people can feel overwhelmed or feel like there's nothing they can do, but this is something that is a small gesture that can really turn somebody's day around. You know, if you can't, you might not be able to save someone, but mm-hmm. you can do something to make their life better in that moment.
Absolutely.
So we sort of talked about this. So we talked about, okay, because the next question is for your listeners who may not know about the issue. Can explain what children and cancer.
I can.
Okay. So you've talked about a bit about this and about the prevalency of untreated cancer in Uganda. Can you explain what children with cancer in Uganda are currently facing, and why these donations really matter?
Yeah. So at Queen's Cancer Kids First, we've done a lot of research and advocacy about barriers to treatment in Uganda and Africa specifically. This April, we actually published a manuscript in Queen's Science Undergraduate Journal. It's called Barriers to Treatment Access in Uganda. So you can go ahead and take a look at that. It's publicly available if you'd like to read more. But just in general, some of the issues that they're facing patient-level barriers, institutional barriers, and national barriers to treatment. The main issue that we have that's driving this high mortality rate in Uganda, it's 70% mortality, and that is contrasting with about 20%, 20 to 30% mortality in North America. So it's literally an opposite dynamic when it comes to survival versus mortality when you look at childhood cancer in Africa. But the main issue that they're facing is late diagnosis, which is leading to the high mortality rate. So when you look at Africa, and specifically like Uganda, there's so many other diseases that children may have that doctors are screening for. So the primary symptoms of like childhood cancer, especially if it's not like a sarcoma where they have a tumor, is like things like nausea, headache, feeling ill, feeling weak, weight loss. So when a child of 5 years old in Uganda starts having these symptoms, the first thing that doctors think of is, oh, they have malaria, because that's usually the issue. For those who don't know, malaria is it's like a vector illness that's caused by mosquitoes. So tropical mosquitoes in Africa and other tropical countries, they carry this. It makes you very sick, and it's a high cause of death for children under five. So it's usually the malaria diagnosis. They go through treatment for malaria. They take all of the chloroquine pills. And after weeks and weeks of doing that, the child is still ill. So then they're like, okay, what else do they have? Maybe it's cholera. Maybe it's like the flu. Maybe it's this. Maybe it's that. The point to which they get diagnosed with cancer happens way too late. So by the time that they find out that the child has cancer, it's usually like stage three, stage four. And in addition to the late diagnosis, the children are also facing a lot of other social determinants of health. So these are things that are non-medical that influence your health outcomes. So poverty is a big issue. Poverty impacts access to treatment, access to transportation to go to the hospital. It impacts everything. There's also an issue of this geographic concentration of care, which basically means that majority of the healthcare services that children would need to access to get treated for cancer is in the capital city, which is called Kampala. But it's like saying in all of Ontario, you can only get care in Toronto and you live in Sudbury. What are you going to do? You have to travel. So a parent has a job. They have maybe four or five other children to take care of. And they have to somehow find the money to move from Sudbury all the way to Toronto to access care. Cancer treatment is not like an injection that you take once and you can go home. You have to be in the hospital. You have to get supportive care. You have to be there for multiple days. They have to find money for accommodation. They have to find money for food. They have to find money for clothing. They still have to pay for everything for their other children. So it's a lot of out-of-pocket costs. And the funny thing is that cancer treatment in Uganda is free. So they can access chemotherapy for free, but it's all of these out-of-pocket things that make it so hard to access. And that leads to another patient-level barrier, which is treatment abandonment. So a lot of patients, unfortunately, like they'll have their child literally get a diagnosis and they'll tell them your child has cancer, you need to get this treatment, but they can't afford to keep going back and forth. I read an article one time about, this was an adult patient with cancer in Uganda, but they were literally sleeping in the ward, like on the floor in the cancer ward because they couldn't afford a bed to stay in to get treatment. So it's all of these things that compound that lead to like, okay, even if the medication is available, like how are we going to address the poverty that is making it difficult for them to even get to the hospital to be treated? So, you know, bringing toys, bringing books, bringing clothing, no, that's not like helpful. This is like a systemic issue. This is a national-wide issue that we can't address as students. But, you know, addressing something like quality of life and just making them feel a little bit better even in their situation is helpful to show that people care about them. And I will say that there are a lot of strengths when it comes to childhood cancer in Uganda. There's a lot of family strength, so it's a very collectivist culture over there. So it's not as isolated, I feel like, as Canada can be a little bit like individualistic. There's so much family support and there's so much love and camaraderie among patients in the wards and families who are going through the same thing. And there's also a lot of resilience with faith. I feel like whether it's Christianity or Islam or whatever religion, there's a lot of belief in God and belief in that God will heal me and God is doing what he needs to do. And a lot of the patients and families have this belief that, you know, whatever happens, it's God's will. And it can be very liberating to have that kind of perspective because they put it in God's hands and they go through what they need to go through. And it gives them peace of mind, which as a Christian, I believe in as well. So yeah, that's what's going on.
So yeah, I mean, obviously a complex issue. And even in a place like Canada, where we also have free healthcare, I know many people who've undergone intensive treatment for cancer and have ended up with GoFundMe campaigns because it is, as you say, there's so many expenses beyond the healthcare. And that's time and it's money and it's time off work and childcare and all of those things. Something like a toy drive, it's a first step towards awareness and it's letting people know that someone is aware of what you're going through and someone cares and someone wants to give you some comfort. And I think that is, it's a small, but it's an important contribution. So if people are listening and they want to give, what types of items are most needed right now? And how can someone know if what they want to donate is appropriate?
That's a great question. We have a list. Let me pull that up really quick.
I will say I borrowed some shots from your social media.
Oh, you did?
So I'll put those in with the drive call as well.
Okay, that's perfect.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. That's a great question. So these are things that you can donate. So we're looking for clean and gently used new items of clothing, which is in good condition. So things like t-shirts are perfect, things like hoodies, sweatpants, sweaters, jeans, tank tops, some button-ups, some mid-length skirts, even light jackets like jean jackets and windbreakers are great. Adult-sized clothing is acceptable. So the patient population that we're donating to patients at Malago Referral Hospital in Kampala. So the patients are between like 1 week and 18 years old. Majority of them are 7 to 18. So adult-sized clothing will be acceptable. And we can also donate to parents and siblings. Everything is helpful. Other items that are really helpful are beanies and hats, like baseball caps and things like that. We're also looking for books, so fiction and nonfiction books, ideally in English, would be great. More so like small books, so not textbooks, as well as empty coloring books if you have any, those are really great, as well as empty notebooks, empty sketchbooks, and things like that. We're also accepting clean and gently used backpacks and purses and string bags. And of course for toys, anything like plushies that are clean and gently used. Plushies, toy cars, dolls, fidget toys, if you have them, that'd be great. And then some things that we are not taking. We're not taking any clothing that is ripped, stained, damaged, dirty, or anything like that. So the patients that we're donating to are immunocompromised. So we really want to make sure that items will be clean when they arrive, of course, like in Kampala. But we really want to make sure that the items are in good condition because that's what they deserve. We're also not accepting any socks, underwear, bras, bikinis, bodysuits, bandos, pantyhose, anything like that. We're not taking any shoes. We're also not taking suitcases, things like jewelry and makeup, skincare products. We're not taking any kind of hair accessories or any winter jackets, of course, because they don't need winter jackets. No winter clothing, like gloves and things like that. We're also not accepting like heavy textbooks. Of course, textbooks are not acceptable. Or stationery, like pens and pencils, and no technology, so like no iPads, headphones, and stuff, because it's difficult to distribute that equitably. Another thing that we're doing a raffle. So we're going to raffle a mystery item, and this mystery item is going to be unveiled in the last week of November. So I guess we're going to get to this later.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we have to talk about like the pins and the other things that they can donate.
Cool. So yeah, I guess I've been saying toy drive, but it's more than that. It's toy book, clothing, items of comfort, items of practicality. And if people want to double check that list, it is up on your social media well. And what is your social?
Yeah, you can find us on Instagram at Queens Cancer Kids First.
Okay, so check out Queens Cancer Kids First. You've got the list there. So you've mentioned what type of items are welcome. Where can students and community members, you don't have to be a student, if you're listening from Kingston area and you want to get involved, you're welcome to too. But so where can students and community members drop off their donations? And what does the weekly collection setup look like? You mentioned it's a pop-up.
Yeah, so we do have pop-ups. So we're doing different locations each time just for accessibility purposes. We do them every Friday. Last Friday, we were at Gordon Hall, which is on campus. This Friday, we are going to be on campus, but the location will be unveiled on our Instagram. It might already be out by the time you're listening. So just check out our Instagram at Queens Cancer Kids First. We're also doing a donation drive next Wednesday, November 26th, and next Friday is our last one, November 28th.
Okay, so if you missed last week, you still have three more opportunities to kind of spend some time looking through items that you have at home, or, you know, if you're going out this weekend and you're doing some holiday shopping for other people, this could be a great opportunity for you to pick up some other items that could be really appreciated and valued by someone somewhere else in the world. So beyond donating items, what other ways can people support this initiative? I imagine that there's a lot of human power involved, and I imagine there's also an expense in sending things over to Uganda.
Yes. Yeah. So if you'd like to get involved but you're not able to donate, we're actually selling our pins. So we have our QCKF pins, which are gold metal ribbons that you can stick on and pin to your clothing. And this is actually the international symbol for childhood cancer. So we're selling these in addition to like collecting items. So they're going to be at our collection points. We're selling them for $3 for one pin and $5 for two pins. And we're also doing a raffle. So if you are able to buy 2 pins, you get a ticket into our raffle, and we're going to be basically giving away a mystery item that's going to be revealed at the end of November. So if you buy 2 pins for $5, you'll be entered into the raffle. If you also donate, you will be entered into the raffle. So 5 clothing items counts as 1 raffle ticket, as well as 1 book counts as 1 raffle ticket, and 1 toy is 1 raffle ticket. You can also opt out of the raffle if you're not interested, but I would opt in. You never know. So, yeah.
And if people have cash that they want to give, I mean, $3 and 2 for $5, that's super reasonable. If people want to give more, are you able to take extra donations?
Yes, we are accepting monetary donations. And those would mainly go into shipping costs to go to Uganda.
Okay, awesome. So yeah, again, check out Queen's Cancer Kids First Instagram to make sure you find out the locations for their next pop-ups. There's 3 more opportunities coming up this Friday, next Wednesday, and the final Friday in November. And Julia, before we wrap up, what final message would you like to share with listeners who are hearing about this drive for the first time?
Yes. I forgot to mention something in the beginning.
Okay.
Yeah, the partners that we're doing it with. Okay. Let me make sure I get that. Okay. So we are doing this drive in collaboration with UCCF, Uganda Child Cancer Foundation, and this is an organization and a non-governmental, sorry, we are doing this drive in partnership with Uganda Child Cancer Foundation, or UCCF. So this is an NGO that was founded in 2006, and they help improve and promote childhood cancer control through family support, as well as education, awareness, advocacy, and research. So UCCF is a really great organization. They're based out of Mulago National Referral Hospital, which is a major hospital in Kampala that majority of the children receive treatment at, as well as I believe they work in the Uganda Cancer Institute, UCI. So UCCF's primary mission is to eliminate childhood cancer through support. So they provide psychosocial support using things like play therapy, writing, counseling, and also providing transport to Uganda Cancer Institute. They have helped over 1,000 children in their care, as well as 200 families. Okay, I'm going to record this again because I'm like stuttering everywhere. Because I usually don't read. Right. So when I read, it like throws me all the way off.
No worries. So maybe I'll just say something like, this sounds like a big initiative, and you do have some partners that you're partnering with for this program that I think give a little bit of a holistic approach to what you're trying to do here. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So I'm really happy and glad to announce our partner organization, which is the Uganda Child Cancer I am really glad and happy to announce our partnering organization, which is the Uganda Child Cancer Foundation, or UCCF. So this is an NGO that was founded in 2006 out of Kampala, and their primary mission is to eliminate childhood cancer through support in Uganda. So they provide psychosocial support using things like play therapy, writing, and counseling, and they also provide transport to the Uganda Cancer Institute. They've helped over 1,000 children in their care, including providing transportation support to over 200 families. They've helped over 700 families receive psychosocial support, and they've distributed over 12,000 meals to caregivers and children. They work at UCI, Uganda Cancer Institute, and also Mulago National Referral Hospital, which is where we'll be distributing our donations to.
Okay, that's... That's great.
That's great. Sorry. They're a really cool organization. And yeah. They have more of a global reach. So they work in Uganda, but they have partners with hospitals in the U.S. I believe they partner with Johns Hopkins.
Okay.
I may be wrong.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like an organization like that would have quite a network. Because, I mean, that's addressing things from a lot of different angles and offering care and research in a lot of different angles. So before we go, is there a final message you'd like to share with listeners who are hearing about this drive or about your club for the first time?
That's a good question. Final message. Sorry, let me just think for a second. I'm trying to think of something that I haven't said already.
Like, are you looking for a new volunteer?
We have quite a large team. That's awesome. Final message, I would say. Yeah, I'll get it. Okay. A final message I would have is to be generous. I believe personally that what you give in the world is what you get back. So you never know how much something that maybe you don't value or something that you think, you know, it may not be helpful will actually impact someone. So if you're hesitant on like, oh, I don't know if this hoodie is like good enough to donate, or I don't know if I can give this, just show up, just show your support. Even if you're just going to come and have a conversation, I'm so, so happy. And my team as well is so, so happy to meet you guys and talk about this issue, because it's very, very close to home and we're all passionate about it. So I'm going to re-record this because I don't know what I'm saying. Let me take that again.
No, it's great.
Okay.
I feel like end of the day, it's always so hard to like collect thoughts.
Yeah. Okay. A final message I would have to all of the listeners today is to not hesitate to donate. If you are feeling a little bit apprehensive about coming out, maybe you're not a student and you're like, I don't know if I should come to campus to give to this drive, we're really open to contributions from everyone, even if it is just monetary, or even if it is like an old storybook or anything like that. Literally anything is helpful. So if you're confused about whether an item is like quote unquote good enough for us to take, we're really happy to meet with you and consult. We're also really happy just to have a conversation. I know that our team is really passionate about this issue and about health equity. So we're happy, happy to support. If you also know someone in the Kingston area or in Ontario who is affected by childhood cancer and you would like some support, please, please, please do not hesitate to reach out to us. We talked a lot about Uganda on this episode just because this is the topic and the location of our toy drive, but we also work in Canada, of course. So if you need support, please email us. You can find us at queenscancerkidsfirst@gmail.com, or you can also DM our Instagram at queenscancerkidsfirst on Instagram, and we're happy to help in any way and any shape and capacity that we can.
That's amazing. And I think it's also, I know there are drives and sometimes this time of year people can be torn, but when I think of like, you're sort of looking for the opposite in terms of clothing that most people are looking to give this time of year. It's not jackets and heavy, warm things. It's so if you've got lightly used clean summer wear or stuff from the fall that you know is not going to fit your kid anymore, this could be a great opportunity to do something impactful with it rather than just, you know, tossing it in a recycling bin.
Absolutely.
or yeah. Dropping it off at Value Village. So I want to thank you again, Julia, for joining us today. It was a pleasure to see you again. Thanks for all of the great music that you submitted to help contribute to the atmosphere of this episode. And once again, thank you so much for coming in to talk to us about this toy book and clothing holiday drive run by Queen's Cancer Kids First. Check out their Instagram. Look through your closets, look through your bookcases. If you have something to give, you could be making a huge impact for someone. So.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
Thank you. So we're here with Queen's Cancer Kids First, and with us we have Julia. Now, Julia, you are one of the original founders, I believe, of this group on campus. Do you want to tell people what your role is and... what you do with the club?
Absolutely. Hi, everyone. My name is Julia. I'm in my fourth year of health sciences, and I am one of the original founders and also the current co-president of Queen's Cancer Kids First. At the club, I mainly lead socials and marketing, and I also lead the research and database portfolio. I do this alongside my good friend, Dream Twit Barnes, who's a second-year medical student at Queen's.
Great. And I guess like we could talk a little bit too about some of the other activities that Queen's Cancer Kids First does. Mm-hmm. So obviously we're going to be talking later about the toy, book, and clothing drive that you have. But you're a very active club year round. What kind of resources or what kind of activities are you offering to Queen's and the greater Kingston community?
Yeah, that's a great question. So right now, something that we have ongoing is our research database. So this is a blog that we have on Medium. So you can find it if you search Queen's Cancer Kids First blog. It's called the QCare Kids blog. And our goal with this blog is to make cancer information more accessible. So I talk a little bit later in the episode. I don't know where this will be placed, but I worked in cancer research, clinical research for a couple of years, and I was on a study that was talking about or investigating the impact of language barriers on cancer treatment and cancer care. So I talked to a lot of families who were immigrants and who didn't speak English as a first language, and I heard a lot of stories about how they struggled to communicate their needs and understand what was going on in their child's treatment journey because of not having translators available and things like that, as well as like low health literacy, which I think is an issue regardless of whether you speak English as a first language or not. So our goal with this blog is to make information that parents and families are searching for more accessible and easier to understand. So we have a team of 15 amazing research team members, which are all students at Queen's in programs like life sciences, health sciences, bio, biochem, amazing, very intelligent and competent students who are writing these articles or researching using peer-reviewed sources. And they're rewriting them in ways that are understandable. So we talk about things like how to get psychosocial support, how to support your child through symptoms like hair loss, self-esteem changes, how to deal with symptoms like nausea, loss of appetite, weight loss, financial support for cancer as well. We talk about a lot of subjects that you may be searching for or someone you know. So if you would like more accessible information, please check out our database. We publish every month. So we have 38 articles out so far. We started it this year, so it's growing, and we're expecting a lot more coming soon.
That's a great resource because I think a lot of people, cancer is still a pretty terrifying diagnosis for a lot of people. And I think especially when it's your child that's been diagnosed, the shock that you're in, you don't even know what questions to ask,
absolutely,
right? So, and where can people find that? So you said it's what's the web address, or is it? I know if you go to your social, you can find it through your link tree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can find it through our link tree. Also, just about what you said, we do also publish a lot on different diagnoses. So we explain common diagnoses like different leukemias and lymphomas, and we also explain treatments. So we have an article about chemotherapy, we have one about immunotherapy, all of the therapies. So if you'd like to read more about that, that's available. Let me find the web address, Queen's Care.
And I mean, with this all being published in the last year, you also know that you're going to be getting information that is contemporary and relevant to the Canadian medical system now, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So the web address is medium.com/@QueensCancerKidsFirst. And you can also find it on our Instagram through our link tree.
Okay, great. So we've talked a little bit about the club, but we're going to be talking specifically about an event that you have coming up. And then I'll blend that in to the introduction that I did before. So Julia, in addition to the information that you're giving us today about the toy book and clothing drive, you've given me a great selection of music. And if listeners listened to the last takeover that you were involved with, they will know that you have great taste in music. Do you want to talk a little bit about some of the songs that you've selected today? I know specifically you wanted to talk about one by Saudi Soul.
Absolutely. So the music that you've been hearing on this episode are all by African artists. Saudi Soul is a group, band, I guess you could say, that's based out of East Africa. They sing in Swahili, which is the main language that you hear across Kenya, Tanzania, and also Uganda. I also had some songs by Burna Boy, which is a really big Nigerian artist, as well as Ira Star, who is Nigerian, and a song that you just heard, Midnight Drum, which is by a few Ugandan artists. The next song, which is Live and Die in Africa by Saudi Soul, I think is a really special song to me, particularly being an immigrant and being able to see, you know, the life in Africa as well as the life in Canada, and like that contrast that we're talking about when it comes to poverty and health outcomes. And it's just important to recognize that, you know, people have strength, people have resilience. It's not good to look down on people or to pity people or to see them as like less than because they're struggling with something that maybe we're not struggling with in Canada. It's important to paint pictures of strength. And I think Live and Die in Africa is a perfect picture of African strength and African resilience, where, you know, we're not doing this from a place of weakness or a place of pity, but a place of empowerment and wanting to improve life that's already really amazing. And there's already so much joy and happiness and contentment in Africa. So I think this is what this song embodies to me.
Okay. I think that's a great note for us to leave it off on. So we'll wrap up today's episode with Live and Die in Africa by Saadi Sol. Okay.
Yay!
Thank you.